This is Ashley Hodge. I'm coming to you with Kendall Kaut. So this is a joint podcast with Sikkim 365 and Our Daily Bears. Kendall, how you doing? Are you staying safe from this coronavirus stuff?
Doing well to the best of my knowledge, Ashley. The county I live in has declared that they will no longer even be testing unless you're elderly, because we don't have enough tests here because it's getting to be so widespread. So how are things going for you down in Texas?
Well, it's great. I mean, I'm in the wealth management business by day, so that's just been one of the more enjoyable times to be in that business. I'm sure you can imagine. It's anywhere from trying to keep people calm to trying to keep them rational. I mean, there's just a lot of emotions that go on when the market's so volatile. So hopefully we've seen the worst of it and we can start focusing on the future and rebuilding to, you know, get this economy back on track.
Yeah, that'd be very good for all of us.
Well, I think we want to talk basketball. And I think we talked before this podcast started. We want to focus more on the future because, I mean, it's been a terrific season. Historic season for Scott Drew's Bears. Obviously, the 23 in a row. They were a number one team, you know, the longest of any team this year. They were going to be a number one seed, one of the favorites to win the national championship. I had some money on the Bears to win the national championship at 500-1. I was pretty proud of myself for making that bet, and I'm happy to say that it sounds like there's an opportunity to get my original bet back, which I'm really happy about that because, you know, I had such a good odds there. You know, that's if you can get your money back, that's all you can ask for with that kind of ticket, right?
Yeah, it's the best thing you can do in those circumstances. I remember telling people up here about how you had the 500-1 ticket, so pretty sad that you were not able to cash out on that, but I'm also kind of looking forward to talking about the 2020-2021 season.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think I mentioned this to you before we started rolling the recording, but if you look at, you know, there are some question marks as to who's returning and, you know, what the Bears are going to look like next year. So there are plenty of what ifs. But, you know, some of these basketball analysts around the country are starting to roll out their top fives. Jeff Goodman came out today with Baylor number one. I think Gary Parrish and Norlander, I think they had them number three, if I'm not mistaken. I think Rob Doster had them top five. Most of these analysts, Andy Katz, I think they were top five as well. So the Bears, you know, are probably going to be a top five team headed into next season. We'll have to wait and see what happens with grad transfers and pro defections and all those things considered. But I want to focus on, you know, a comparison here that I think is something to think about for Baylor fans as we look to next year. And, you know, certainly, you know, this is a comparison that I started talking about probably a year and a half ago or, you know, when Maceo Teague and Davion Mitchell were sitting out, because I'd watched them practice a couple times and I knew there was something special brewing in the backcourt. So I started talking about the fact that I thought, you know, Baylor looked a lot like the Villanova teams that won the national championship, where they would just have an abundance of wealth at the guard position. And then when I saw Adam Flagler this past year, that reinforced that, you know, in my mind. And if you look at that Villanova team that won the last national championship for them, with Jalen Brunson and DiVincenzo and Mikal Bridges, Spellman, Pascal, who else am I leaving out? Booth. Those were the main characters. Colin Gillespie, I think, was a younger player on that team. But, I mean, they just really had dominant play at the guard position. And I think that's something that Baylor, if everybody returns, if Butler returns, if Mitchell returns, if Teague returns, and I think, you know, the odds are pretty good. All three of those guys come back. And obviously you need Vital. You need a healthier Tristan Clark. You need, you know, Matt Meyer to continue to progress. But, man, if you get those guys and you had Flagler and you had JTT, you had LJ Cryer, I mean, this looks like a really, really potent team that could certainly win the national championship and may even have a season like Villanova did in 2018, where they went into postseason and they just completely dominated their Big East Conference tournament and then the NCAA tournament. And I think the closest game they had was against Texas Tech in the Elite Eight, where they beat Texas Tech by 12 points. Any comments on that?
Yeah, I think it's a really good comparison, Ashley. The kind of two ways to look at Baylor next season for me are, do you get all the guards back? If so, then I don't think there's any question Baylor is team one or team two. Kind of when I look at next season, Gonzaga and Baylor have the two best teams that they can create. And by that I mean, if Gonzaga returns most of their guys and Baylor returns most of their guys, there's nobody in the country that can create a team as good as those two on paper.
Right.
And for Baylor, as you mentioned, the guards, if you have those four guys back along with LJ Cryer and counting Flagler as returning guys, just like that guard position would just be so deep and so talented that it would be very hard for me to match up with Baylor's guards at that spot. So kind of the big thing is if Jared Butler comes back, you just have such a dominant scoring guard. I put out on Twitter earlier today that I thought it would be the unanimous pick for preseason Big 12 Player of the Year if he comes back. I mean, he was on just about every third-team All-America list. And for me, the other kind of combo is that I think Matt Meyer is just going to be dominant next season. And so I really think Baylor can play Mark Vidal at the five a lot. I think they can play play Meyer at the four. And then if you have Teague, Mitchell, Butler, Flagler, and Cryer, the team's defense is probably going to slip a little bit. But Gonzaga and Baylor could just blow through everybody else, I think, in offensive efficiency, Ashley.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I see it, too. I think it's going to be, I mean, you know, obviously if you're returning two of the, you know, the top 15 defenders in college basketball and Davion Mitchell and Mark Vidal, you should be really good on defense. And I think Teague is an underrated defender. I think Butler's an underrated defender. Matt Meyer got a lot better defensively, but I do think they'll miss Freddie Gillespie defensively. You know, just his understanding of positioning and his savvy. I mean, he was a terrific defensive player, and I'm watching some of these old videos, these 20 to 30 minute videos of, you know, just the main plays and the games at Baylor, their big wins, and I just see over and over again, just, you know, Freddie Gillespie making great defensive plays. So I don't want to, you know, underestimate his loss, because I think JTT is more athletic, and he's a really hard worker, but. You know, I kind of see him more in the mold of like a Quincy Acey, where, you know, he may make some spectacular defensive plays, but I don't know if he's going to be as solid all around as Freddie Gillespie is. And Tristan Clark, you know, I think is an experienced player. And if he's 100%, I think he can be a really good defender and a really good rim protector. But he just doesn't have that, you know, grit that Gillespie has. So I think you're going to miss something there defensively. But that being said, offensively, if Tristan Clark's healthy, I mean, he's a guy that can give you extremely good efficiency in the low post. I mean, he's proven that 2 years ago. So if we can get him back to form, you know, he could be one of the best low post threats in college basketball. I think, you know, Matt Meyer as a stretch four is really intriguing. And then, like you say, you know, Vidal just can play. He can play small forward. He can play center. He can play two guard if you need him. He can play power forward. I mean, he's one of the more versatile players in college basketball. You're just not going to get offensively unless you're talking about, you know, a passing, offensive rebounding. He does some good things offensively, but he's not going to be the most polished offensive option. But you know, I think when all the pieces are put together, I agree with you. This team could definitely be a, you know, a top five team in offensive efficiency.
Yep, and with Vidal, I'm almost at a spot because he had he was named the all glue guy by Seth Davis, and he mentioned in that article that he was maybe going to test the waters for the NBA. If I were Drew and the staff, I would almost tell Mark Vidal, you can shoot 1-3 a game, even if you're shooting 0% when conference play comes around. If you come back, we will let you shoot 1-3 a game, because that's really the thing for the NBA. It's just like Vidal touches every box you want to be PJ Tucker, except hitting threes. And so I don't know how he gets drafted right now on just the hope you can make him a three-point shooter. But if he came back and shot 32% from three and plays the defense he plays, somebody's going to draft him next season. It's just, I think his NBA decision would be, I'm not going to get drafted. Do I want to come back for a fifth year? And if I'm Vidal, I would probably look at it and say, I'm going to play 30 minutes on the best team in the country, and I can focus on just shooting threes and continuing to lift. and that's all I got to focus on for a year. I would think about coming back in that circumstance. This is just such a weird time because we don't know what the NBA scouting process will be like. We don't know if they're going to have a combine. We don't even know when the NBA draft actually is going to be held, if the NBA season gets kicked back. We don't really know anything about this. The whole process for these NBA guys, where if you're a guy like Vital that thinks you might dominate individual workouts, I would think a guy like him has a much higher incentive to come back than maybe some other guys that we've had in the past. I think Vital's a guy who could really dominate workouts. And if you're a team and you see him in a workout, you might say, you know what, I didn't really love how he shot. I wonder how he fits in an NBA offense. Maybe his height's still a little bit of a question mark despite how physical he is. But if he doesn't have the chance to work out for 25 different teams and show what he can do intensity-wise, I just kind of look at it where I always say, if somebody will pay you to do something, somebody else will make you do for free. It makes sense to go. But Vital's kind of one of the few times I've ever looked at a Baylor roster and said, I really, really think it would be a mistake for him to go pro, because I just think he'd be in such a perfect spot at Baylor next season.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, like we use the Villanova comparison, you know, a lot of those guys could have gone pro after their, you know, sophomore season, their freshman season, and they decided to come back and keep that nucleus together after a disappointing end. They had a great season. They were 32-4, I believe, the year that they lost to Wisconsin in the second round of the NCAA tournament. But they all decided to come back, and they said, hey, we can all reach our goals together. And sure enough, they win a national championship. They do it in dominant fashion, and five of the top six players are playing in the NBA today. So Spellman, Pascal, Bridges, DiVincenzo, and Brunson are all on NBA rosters. So I really envision that could be a similar situation for Baylor, you know, where they say, hey, listen, let's all reach our goals together, and let's definitely you know, sell out to, you know, being the dominant team in college basketball, everybody together, you know. And Vital, like you said, stranger things have happened. You know, I mean, he hasn't shown evidence that he's going to be a great three-point shooter, but we see Quincy Acey, who's turned into a pretty good three-point shooter in the NBA. The guy that kind of comes to mind for me is Dustin Hoge for Iowa State. Now, Mark Vital's a lot better player than Dustin Hoge is. But, you know, Dustin Hoge was like maybe a 30% free three-point shooter and turned into like a 44% three-point shooter as a senior. So I think, you know, if Vital can get in the low 30s, I mean, shoot. I mean, that's going to be pretty intriguing to the NBA, given how great a defender he is, how great of a passer he is, you know, how much of a glue guy he is, one of the top offensive rebounders in college basketball. So, I mean, I could definitely see that. If he could get his free throw percentage closer to 70%, and if he could become, you know, a 30% free three-point shooter, I think there's a lot to sell there of, hey, you know, let's hone your craft one more year, and let's, you know, make sure we work really hard on these areas and become, you know, we're going to let you take one or two threes a game. We're going to let you, you know, showcase your skills. I mean, you've earned that, and, you know, I think that would be a good win-win proposition for Mark Vital and for the rest of the team.
Certainly. And I think the other two guys that are the biggest threats to go would be Davion Mitchell, I think, second, and Jared Butler is the biggest one.
Right.
So I guess when we look at Davion Mitchell, the case for him to go pro is that he's now going to be 3 years removed from or he's now in his third year removed from high school because he had that redshirt season he set out. He's an incredible defender. His ball handling is not probably going to improve much. And so if he has another year that he has to wait, is he suddenly viewed as a little bit too old for the NBA? And then if he doesn't hit threes, it's just he lost a year of potential earnings by not going pro. I think the contrary take to that would be he comes back and we think Baylor's offense is better next season. He's going to get more open three-point opportunities. And if you're Davion Mitchell, really the thing that's preventing him from being on draft boards right now is that his three-point shooting, while better than it had been at Auburn, is still not at the level you'd want to have for a lead guard in the NBA.
Right.
And so for Davion Mitchell, your NBA comp is probably that you want to be seen as a little bit smaller Tony Allen. And Tony Allen couldn't hit threes in the league, but he was such a dominant offensive player at Oklahoma State. And if you're Mitchell and you come back and you have a much better offense around you this season, I think it will be a better offense than it was this year, even acknowledging that it was a still good offense, but not as great as Baylor probably hoped. But if Mitchell comes back and the shots are a little bit easier for him, and he maybe doesn't have to sell out every single play on defense like he did during the year because Baylor was in a few too many close games, I think that gives him an opportunity to show he's a better three-point shooter. And he played a lot better from beyond the arc later in the campaign.
Yep.
So I think that for Mitchell, what it really comes down to is if you compare Malik Newman from Kansas, where Malik Newman, kind of a similar deal where he was a really good player at Mississippi State for a year, was a good player there, transfers, sits out the year, plays at Kansas, KU makes the Final Four of the year, they have an NCAA tournament, but then doesn't end up getting drafted and then kind of misses out on some of the better times at KU. So that'll be what I think kind of matters for Mitchell is, do you want to come back and be on a team that could win a championship, recognize that you still would have the chance to go pro and be in whatever spot you'd be in right now? I don't think he's going to fall any worse than he falls right now, but I think his floor right now is that he's very unlikely to get drafted. And so that would be a reason, I think, if you're Davion Mitchell, that you're just like Mark Vidal, where your defense is so good and you're so intense that if you can just hit 37% of your threes next year, you creep up on some draft boards, everybody wants to work you out. That's a real good reason, I think, for Mitchell to come back too.
Yeah, I mean, Mitchell's proven that he is an NBA caliber defender for sure. I think that he can be a lot better offensively. He ended up this year with 100 offensive rating, KenPom. I think he could definitely get that over 110. He cut down on the turnovers. His assist rate could be better than it was this past year. He can get more steals. I think he can shoot over 70% from the free throw line. And like you mentioned, he shot 35% in conference from three-point land, only 32% overall. But I think 37%, 38% is a doable goal. And I think repetition, man. I think all these guys, I mean, I think if they reach their goals and if they were to become like that, you know, Villanova 2018 team, I don't see a reason why, you know, Baylor couldn't have four or five pros on this roster, you know. Teague is interesting. I mean, he's not the elite athlete that Davion Mitchell is, but he's got a wingspan, and that is really, really important. I mean, I kind of see him, I don't know if this comparison's the best comparison, but I kind of think about George Hill, a guy that's, you know, got, you know, 6'10 wingspan like Maceo Teague, you know, and George Hill's, you know, definitely carved out a pretty nice NBA career for himself. I think that Butler, Butler's the guy that I think realistically is probably a little closer to his ceiling, but I think Butler can take it to another level. I mean, I think he can be a lot more efficient than he is and show the NBA, you know, kind of like a Buddy Hield. You know, if he stays in school one more year, he can become more and more efficient as time goes on and get that offensive rating closer to 120, cut down on the turnovers, shoot over 40% from three, shoot, you know, in the 90% range from the free throw line. I mean, all of those things I think would really help his case and certainly give him that if he was Big 12 player of the year and he was first team All-American, I think that would give him, you know, a pretty strong case to be a first round draft pick coming out after his junior year.
Right. And so for me, Butler has a real interesting decision because I think he's definitely going to get drafted if he goes pro. But as you mentioned, Ashley, the question for him is, can I get myself into the first round or maybe even get myself into the mid first round? I don't think he's going to be a lottery pick unless he just crushes and is the unanimous national player of the year. But I think he could be a mid first round pick if he came back and had the efficiency a little bit higher at the line. A lot of the formulas the NBA guys like rely upon how well you shoot at the line.
Yep.
And his numbers there weren't quite as good as you maybe want for some of those formulas. And then the other thing I think to consider if you're Jared Butler is that this is a very weak draft at the top for the NBA, like just catastrophically awful in terms of it seems unlikely that there's any franchise player at the top of the draft. But it is a pretty good draft for kind of those good lead ball handler, backup point guard slot guys in the NBA, where you've got Devon Dotson, Tyrese Halliburton, and then you have a ton of guys who didn't play college basketball this year, so LaMelo Ball, R.J. Hampton, and there's an Israeli kid who's really thought of pretty highly. And so it's a draft with a lot of potential point guards. Next year's draft is going to be much better at the top than this year's draft was, but Trey Jones is going to get drafted this year too. You just have a lot of guys that slot in to what Jared Butler's viewed as right now, which is why I don't think there's any way he moves into the first round if he goes pro now, but I would not begrudge Jared Butler if he looks at it and just says, you know what, I want to make money, I can go pro now. He is still pretty young for his class, which is an advantage that he has that a Mark Vidal doesn't have.
Right.
So the decision is so different for Jared Butler than it is for Mitchell and Vital. Mitchell and Vital are not going to get drafted if they go pro. Their decision is, do we think we could somehow get drafted if we go pro and balance that with a year of lost income? For Butler, it's, I know I'm going to get drafted, but do I want to be a second-round pick that has to grind through the G League next year and deal with watching a team I didn't get to play in the tournament with my sophomore year, possibly be a top-five team without me? I don't know how you balance that if you're a guy, because I don't think anyone's ever – obviously no one's been in an emotional situation like that. So if he comes back, I think Baylor should be the unanimous number one team in the preseason. They won't be, because everybody's going to analyze things too much. But if he comes back, to me, Baylor is the easy number one team in the preseason, and I think they're a good bit better than they were this year, even with losing Freddie Gillespie and Devontae Bandu.
Yeah, you know, it's I mean, he definitely has a tough decision to make, because, you know, I mean, if he's going to be guaranteed like an early second round pick, I don't know if his stock's going to be a whole lot higher as a senior. I mean, or a junior. I mean, I'm sorry. But he's still, like you said, he's still a pretty young junior. I mean, he's not like, you look at guys like Miles Powell. Miles Powell is projected to be a second round pick. Lamar Stevens is another guy that's, he's taller, but, from Penn State. And then you got Peyton Pritchard is the other guy I was thinking of. Peyton Pritchard, who is, kind of a similar situation. Marcus Howard. I mean, you do have a lot of guys that can score.
Sure, Cassius Winston.
Cassius Winston is a great example. Whereas Butler is a little bit more similar to that, is he just doesn't, I mean, he's stronger than those guys, I think. And, he's got a nasty, nasty crossover and a little bit of a burst. But he's also not like, a guy that's going to jump 40 inches as a vertical. He's not going to, be a blazer, as far as speed is concerned. He's, going to get by with skill, efficiency. And, so from that standpoint, I think he can grow. Buddy Hield's a guy that I think of. I think of the guy at Wichita State that stayed 4 years. Drawing a blank. Who's the guy that's played
Fred
for the
Fred VanVleet, maybe?
Yeah, Fred VanVleet, So, I mean, there's examples of guys. I mean, there's something to be said for just honing your craft. Now, the argument is, well, I can hone my craft in the pros, and I can do that in the G League. I mean, it's hard to compare a top Power 5 team with all the resources, with all the exposure you get, to the G League, because, I mean, it's kind of a cutthroat environment. And, I think that there's probably more examples of guys that stayed in college, improved their stock, and ended up having great NBA careers than there are guys that, started in the G League and really, carved their way to the top after they're in the G League. Most of those guys that are in the G League end up trying to, finish out in Europe. I think if Butler's aspirations are to play in the NBA and play for a long time, I think he's got some work to do.
Right, and to me, the two great Baylor examples of that are either, is it a Torian Prince situation or is it a Ladarius Dunn spot?
Right.
Where Prince, after his junior year, would have been drafted, elects to come back, becomes a lottery pick instead of being a probably early second-round pick. He's real good in an international ball, and then he gets the chance to kind of be a focal point on a Baylor team where he's not overwhelmed, where you look at Ladarius Dunn, and that 2011 Bears team had nobody who could do anything on offense.
Right.
If they weren't getting the ball themselves created, like Perry Jones couldn't really create on his own as a freshman, A.J. Walton.
Right.
Great defender, great human being, not going to happen. The good thing for Butler in that spot is that he's not going to be put in the Ladarius Dunn situation where he's going to be the only guy that has to create. Like, I could see if you were Butler and Davion Mitchell and Macy Oteague and Adam Flagler are just like, the quarantine was literally so bad, I can never be in college again, I have to earn a paycheck.
Right.
It's the great... That happens and they all leave. Yeah, Jared Butler, you don't have to be the only guard on Baylor's roster, along with LJ Cryer. Go ahead and leave. But I don't know. There's just so much going on right now that I think it's tough to get an evaluation on Butler. I really don't have a sense of whether he's going to go pro or not, because I think the easiest way to answer this all right now is I don't know that anybody really knows as much about any future decision as they can feel comfortable with right now with what's going on with coronavirus.
Sure.
So I think it's even like, I'm sure there are probably days where everyone who's looking at going pro has woken up and thought, if you ask them today, they'd have to go pro because they're so angry. And if you ask them other days, they might be so upset about not getting to play in the tournament, that they think they've got to come back. So that's kind of my sense, is that I just don't think anybody really knows what they're doing, because we don't know if 6 weeks from now we're all still going to be social distancing, or if the NBA will be back and we'll all be out spending lavishly and living our dreams.
So let's go through the Big 12, and I'll ask you some guys. I did this with Grayson, and you know, I want to get your opinion whether they go pro or not. So, I mean, Bill Self is – let's start with Kansas. Bill Self's already said that Devon Dotson is probably going pro. So I would expect that to be a likely defection. Would you agree with that?
99.99%. Screw it. You know what? This, too much uncertainty in this era. 100% Devon Dotson is going pro.
So the other two, all right, let me throw this scenario out to you. Kansas gets hammered. You know, I think there's a lot of people that are cynical, but I think they're going to get a postseason ban next year. So if they get a postseason ban next year, and if, you know, Bill Self is suspended for the year, or if Bill Self just decides to leave, how do you think Marcus Garrett and Ochai Agbaji make decisions based on that? So let's assume that case first. Do you think those guys come back if that's the situation?
I think if that's the situation that Ochai will go pro, I think that Marcus Garrett would still come back.
Okay, so Marcus Garrett would be a senior, obviously one of the best players in the Big 12, very valuable player. So if Ochai was gone, then you're looking at David McCormick, you're looking at Marcus Garrett, you're looking at Christian Brown. You know, those are their main pieces. Tristan Inaruna, how do you pronounce his last name?
I think it's Inaruna.
Inaruna. And then they've got the five-star kid coming in. But if that's the situation, the five-star might decide to go elsewhere or try to get out of his LOI. So those would be some, you know, questions about Kansas. So Texas, yeah, and, go ahead.
Oh, sure. And I think Jalen Wilson will come back. He had been out for the campaign. But my guess is that, and this is also the uncertainty, is does Kansas get hit with what's going on, and is the NCAA somehow a little different with all the revenue they've lost from the NCAA tournament, all they still have to sort through, to the notice of allegations get pushed back a little bit in terms of a resolution? Obviously, we've seen with Baylor football that the NCAA sometimes is not the most timely in dealing with whatever the heck they're dealing with. So I think that Ochai will be back as well. I have Kansas probably around the number 10 team in the country. With Allen Fieldhouse's advantage, that's still good enough to contend, win the Big 12, and make a run at the tournament. But I would be a little nervous if I'm Kansas. As good as Marcus Garrett is as a defender, he is slotted in to play their 35-minute-a-night point guard. And, man, I don't feel real comfortable if I'm a team that has to produce offense night in and night out in the Big 12. If Marcus Garrett, Ochai, and Aruna are going to play major minutes, it's like those guys cannot shoot. Yep. And if you don't have shooters, it's just like there's a ceiling for what your team is. And as good as they might be defensively, if you can't run Doak down the middle of the court and just dunk because he's a giant man, I'm not real confident that Jayhawk team has what it takes to make a Final Four or contend for the Big 12 championship ultimately.
No, I'm with you on that. So let's look at West Virginia. West Virginia's probably going to get both of their big guys back. I mean, who knows about Oscar T, but Oscar T is, I think, the murmurs behind the scenes are that he's coming back. So, you know, West Virginia may be that major competition for Baylor and Texas Tech. I mean, it may be Kansas is a top 15 team, but they're the fourth best team in the Big 12 next year, because I think Texas Tech and West Virginia are going to be really good. I think Texas should be good. You know, we say that every year, but they have everybody back. So, but you know, as far as pro defections, are you expecting any from West Virginia? Do you think, I mean, Oscar T is really the only one who's probably got that option.
That's the one I can think of, Ashley. And I know when we've talked in the past, we've often mentioned that that's the one. I think John Wall, for me, is number one, and then Oscar T is number two for guys you really wish Baylor would have landed.
Right.
Because I think that if Baylor landed him, if Baylor landed him, they might have gone undefeated this season, and then we all would just be losing our minds that we're not playing in the NCAA tournament with a chance to match Indiana as an undefeated champion. So
true.
I think Oscar T will come back. My kind of hot take in that range is that I think that, once again, Texas Tech is getting a little overrated.
Yeah.
It's
let's talk about them. So,
sure. What's your take there?
Well, I mean, I think Jamias Ramsey, always pronounce his name wrong. I think he's gone for sure.
I'd say 98%.
Yeah. And I think Moretti is a significant pro risk, because I heard the rumors last year that he was heavily considering going after last year, and you know, going to play pro ball in Italy. And I've heard that, you know, even hotter after this season. So if Moretti leaves, they're looking at, you know, Kyler Edwards, Terrence Shannon. That's a pretty good, you know, start. Then they've got the Joel Natambwe kid from UNLV, who's a good player for UNLV. They've got a five-star point guard from Chicago coming in, but he's a freshman. They've got Micah Peavy. If they lose Moretti, I think that's a significant loss for them. And I would put them, you know, a little bit lower. I mean, who knows what they're going to do with grad transfers. They always pull in a couple significant grad transfers, so I'm sure they'll do the same. But I think right now you have to look at them maybe in that 4 to 5 range in the Big 12. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then Chris Clark will be a tough loss for them as well.
Yep.
And so, I think that Baylor is the clear number one team this year. Like when we talked about last season, we said that we thought Baylor had the best team, but we mentioned that Kansas was still going to be really good. For me, I think Baylor's the clear one. And again, as you mentioned with Shaka, Texas has no business finishing outside of the top two in the Big 12 next year. I mean, in the same vein that it was kind of like for Texas Tech, my take is they got a lot of guys coming back. Maybe Moretti goes pro, as you mentioned, but even if he doesn't return, or if he, let's say that he goes pro, plays in Italy next year, obviously they've got a lot going on with coronavirus there. They got a lot of dudes back, but it's like the dudes they have coming back are not dudes that had them contending to make a Final Four. They were dudes that had them, if they had lost to Texas in the first round of the Big 12 tournament, as a possible team that wouldn't even have made the NCAA tournament. So sure. I think Texas is very, very good. That's the team that when I look at them, I'm like, they radically underachieved this season until the very end. That's the team that probably scares me the most. If anybody but Shaka were coaching them, I think he's a good coach, but it's like not good enough in this league. That's the team that probably puts the most scare into me, just roster-wise. I think the advantages of Allen Fieldhouse, I think Bill Self might elevate Kansas a little bit higher, but Texas has a heck of a lot better roster to me than KU does next year.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if they got Jericho Sims, he showed at the end of the season before he got hurt that he was – you know, one of the top big guys in the conference. Obviously, the three guards are very experienced. So I think the only backcourt that can really even be talked about in the same breath with Baylor is Texas's backcourt with Andrew Jones, Matt Coleman, Courtney Ramey, and then Jace Fibrace. So that, you know, that's a lot of experience coming back. And then I think
they just have and then Will Baker just is kind of there. It's like he was a five-star guy that wasn't any good this year, but I mean, what an advantage to say, yeah, maybe our five-star guy will become something with his life.
Kai Jones, I mean, he was hurt a lot, you know. They're loaded, man. They've got a lot of talent. They have definitely underperformed. So I agree with you. I think they're probably the team that, you know, is getting most underrated. I'm kind of surprised they're not in more top 25 list, just given the fact that they've got everybody back from, you know, a pretty experienced team. But, they should have been better this year. I think they dramatically underperformed this year. They did have a lot of injuries. I mean, to Shaka's defense, you know, Jericho Sims went down. Kai Jones was hurt a lot. Jace Fibrace went down. You know, you certainly didn't get what you expected from Will Baker. So I think next year they should be a lot better team. I agree with you. Any other?
Yep, and then not.
So big other, you know, we expect Tyrese Haliburton to be a NBA defection. I think Cartier Jada may leave, kind of a mutual parting of the ways. One other guy that's always tested the waters that, he didn't come out last year, but you got to kind of wonder, I mean, if he just wants to play ball in a foreign market is Kevin Samuel for TCU. So I think that kind of sums up the real pro risk. Oklahoma, you know, Brady Manek. I mean, he's not an NBA player, but he may decide, hey, I just want to go to Europe and start earning money. But I would kind of suspect that they're gonna be a good team. Also, they're gonna have everybody back from last year's team, except for Doolittle.
Yep, I think the only other team to maybe mention. So I would agree that I think Oklahoma's a tournament team. I think TCU. K-State and Iowa State are just god-awful. Yeah. Like Scott Drew loves to say that, you know, 1 to 10 in the Big 12, it's a fight every night. He's going to have a tough time saying that.
About, 1 to 7. Yeah, 1 to 7. Because Oklahoma State's obviously bringing Cade Cunningham in. That's going to give them a jolt of excitement. But I think they've got significant losses. Like if they were to get – if they were to pass this rule that seniors can play, you know, the seniors are eligible again, I think Oklahoma State's one of the biggest beneficiaries of that because they get McGriff back. They get Lindy Waters back, Jagua. I mean, I think all three of those guys would return. And they add that to Yorine and Isaac Likely and Cade Cunningham. That's a pretty good nucleus right there.
Right, and I saw you mention on the boards you'll have over at 365, Ashley, kind of a good point about Cunningham and Likely that they just don't really feel to me like guys that play well off of each other.
Yep.
And so the fit with Oklahoma State's not great, but I know we're both big fans of Mike Boynton. He's just like a human being. And he also did it the right way since we're – it feels weird to be, like, more old school now, but it certainly is that way when you see, like, how old some of these guys are coming out, like, what year they were born. For me, the kind of funny thing to consider is that Mike Boynton did it the right way with landing Cade Cunningham, where it was like, back in the day, you hired either the AAU coach or somebody's brother or father. And it's like, yeah, that's the right way to land a prospect, doing it that way, and not the Will Wade way where I couldn't believe that. Have you seen that HBO documentary write-up about Will Wade on that wiretap?
No, I haven't yet. I mean, when is that coming out? Is that coming out? I think March 31st.
I think it's coming out. Yep. So what is that? Is that next Tuesday?
Yeah.
Or two Tuesdays from now or whatever. Right. Yep. Days are running together now.
Sounds right.
But I guess Will Wade is definitely, whatever was reported about Will Wade on the wiretap is actually minor compared to what he's doing, where he's talking about Landon guys. He definitely mentions the strong ass offer. That's talked about in those reports that came out, but he's talking with Christian Dawkins on these wiretaps, and he's talking about how they need to pay more than there's going to be in the G League to land a particular player, and so he's definitely on the wiretaps, and they have the goods on him. Sean Miller, you can at least interpret ambiguously, but I have no idea how Will Wade survives this time, but I don't know how he survived last time, because it was like, I mean, what are they doing there? And
yeah.
It's like, now that they've won a championship in football, do they really care enough about basketball to have the NCAA creeping around? So that documentary is one of the few things we have to look forward to on television, so you better believe. If you don't have HBO, I think you got to find somebody with HBO Go to watch that documentary.
I'm looking forward to it. I know that. That's going to be a must-watch television. But, yeah, I mean, I wish they had another one with Gatto and who's the other guy for Gasanola, you know, to implicate Kansas, because I'm sure that would be really entertaining as well. I think they're all going to get their comeuppance. I think Miller, Self, and Will Wade are the guys that are in the crosshairs of the NCAA. And it wouldn't surprise me if two of those three are not coaching next year. And then, you know, obviously Jamie Dixon's got some smoke on him. Who else? Auburn, Bruce Pearl. I know there's some smoke around that as well.
Why does Sean Miller still have a job? Like, if Sean Miller were not cheating, and he definitely is, I just don't understand why he has a job. Because it's like he has not won enough at Arizona to have any scandal. But if he didn't have a scandal, I think if you were the Arizona fans, you'd be like, we've made zero Final Fours with you.
Yeah.
They were the one seed those back-to-back years that they lost in the Elite Eight to Wisconsin, but that's getting to be 5-6 years ago, and I just don't know how you can be the coach at what's maybe like the ninth best job in the country and have your team barely in the top 25, miss the NCAA tournament one year. You clearly cheat to land DeAndre Ayton, and then you lose a 4-13 game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Scott Drew, you got swept by Scott Drew, I mean, which there's no shame in that at all. I mean, even the best coach in college basketball in the history of college basketball has a losing record against Scott Drew. We know who we're talking about, the Wizard of Lubbock. 3-5 against Scott Drew for the record. But yeah, no, I think that, I mean, you've got a great point. I mean, I think that, to me, it's pretty obvious. I know we have some Sean Miller supporters on our message board, even, thinking of one in particular that's, an Arizona fan as well. And, I think that it's pretty obvious that if you go back and listen to Sean Miller's press conference after he was accused of paying Bruce Bowen And he says, I never made an offer of $100,000 to Bruce Bowen. I never made an offer. He's very specific in his wording. I mean, it's pretty clear that Schlaubach got that wrong, and you know, whatever his source was, that the offers and the money transfers were, that they were talking about were clearly intended for DeAndre Ayton, because when you look at the way everything's worded, you know, he says, I never discussed with Christian Dawkins an offer for Bruce Bowen. You know, so he, like, I mean, this documentary may come out with some of these details, but it seems pretty obvious that you know, all the pay for play stuff was involving DeAndre Ayton.
Yes, I agree.
Well, I mean, it's you know, kind of, I mean, what a bummer. You know, I was there in Kansas City. I know you were going to come to. I mean, you were pulling a press pass, right? I was too, to be one of the few that were going to come to the games if they did it without fans. But you know, just a shame that we weren't able to watch the Big 12 tournament and the NCAA tournament. Totally understand based on what's happened with the coronavirus and how far it spread among NBA players. What do we have? 7 NBA players that have it now, the 4 Nets and the 2 Jazz. And then the other, who's the other guy? Detroit Pistons.
I feel like there is another guy. And it is funny to think that that's what we're going to remember that guy for forever. We're going to be like, yeah, he was the other guy who got coronavirus.
Right.
So I'm also like, yeah, who is the other guy?
Yeah, he was a guy that I think, man, I can't remember the name now. But he played against Rudy Gobert, had a good game against the Jazz, and then tested positive for coronavirus shortly after that. Yeah, it's interesting, interesting times.
Yeah, it's been very weird. I was at the West Virginia game because I got a buddy that lived in D.C., and so we just went down together. And we certainly did not think we were watching the last Big 12 basketball regular season game of the year. Or last game of the season for the Big 12 minus the tournament game. Obviously, it was the last Big 12 regular season game. Hard to put into words kind of what was happening at that time, because when everybody went down, I remember being so down thinking, oh my God, is Meyer not going to return?
Right.
What's going on with the roster? And then it's still just been tough to process, because it's like you get away from thinking about it, then you start thinking about it again, and you're like, for all these stupid teams that are claiming, I saw Calipari kind of claim like, oh, I thought we were going to win the national title. I respect the salesmanship by him there. But Baylor genuinely was one of about 5 teams that could say, we thought we were good enough to win it all, and we could have. I respect Dayton saying that, KU, Gonzaga. Heck, I'll even take San Diego State saying it.
Yeah.
I'll take Michigan State too. But anybody besides those teams, I'm very not down for.
Maybe Seton Hall. Maybe, you know, Gonzaga. Did you say Gonzaga?
Oh, yeah, Gonzaga for sure. But
yeah.
I am going to lose my mind if KU puts up a banner to claim they won the national title, because that will now mean 3 of their 6 banners and Allen Fieldhouse would be for them not winning the NCAA tournament. They claimed the 22 and 23 titles. One of those years, they lost to Mizzou and finished with the same record as Mizzou,
right,
and claim a national title. So, I don't know. Can you be a historic program that 50% of your titles are fake? Texas A&M certainly hopes you can.
Yeah, that would seem, I would be embarrassed to claim that, you know. It is disappointing because Baylor had such a great season and no banners, no hardware to show for it. But hey, all the more reason why these guys need to get the band back together and let's become 2018 Villanova, and you know, let's go out and get the number one seed, choose where our location's going to be. Is it Dallas next year? I think is Dallas the regional, or is I can't remember. Let me look that up real quick.
It would make sense because there were so few, other than Houston, there were no spots either the first weekend or the second weekend that were anywhere close to Waco.
Yeah, I think I remember Dallas was one of them, but I'm looking it up here. All right, future.
I don't know. I know we're getting towards the end, but I did want to ask you, Ashley. I'm guessing some of these NBA agents are going to be talking to the guys and saying, well, you know, coronavirus could come back next year. Who's to say there can be an NCAA tournament next year? So I would just say get ready for a wave of those stories to come out about agents are leaking that this could be a, you know, reoccurring virus until we get a vaccine in 18 months. So we don't even know for sure if we'll play the tournament next year. So prepare for those stories. I think we're playing the NCAA tournament next year. You can all take expose me. I will go on record now. We will play the NCAA tournament next season, but just prepare for those stories. I think that they'll say we may not play next year too.
Yeah, no, I could see that, but I do think, you know, listening to Dr. Fauci today during a 40-minute interview, I mean, you know, he was saying that you know, you certainly have, you know, going to develop some herd immunity. So the threat to the healthcare system is way less next year than it will be this year, because, you know, more people will have had it. And so, you know, the spread of the virus is not as much of a threat. And so I think they'll have a complete, you know, I'm sure they'll have lots of research, lots of data. It will be, you know, less of an unknown. The chances of them canceling the NCAA tournament next year, I think, are very, very small, at least for the coronavirus. I mean, who knows? Who knows what other threats are out there, but certainly the coronavirus. Okay, so I did look it up. Dallas is a regional site next year. A first and second round site. Wichita, San Jose, Boise, Lexington, Raleigh, Detroit, and Providence. So your regionals next year are Memphis, Denver, Minneapolis, and Brooklyn. Okay, so if Baylor had those choices, where do you think they would choose? If they were the number one seed.
You said.
So Brooklyn.
Can you give me those again?
Brooklyn, Memphis, Denver, Minneapolis.
It's just like, why do we not have a regional
in Texas?
Texas or New Orleans.
Right.
If it were me, I would pick Memphis of those. Denver's fine too, because you figure there's nobody good other than KU that's anywhere close to Denver.
Yeah, I think they would pick Denver. I mean, it's probably a little closer than Memphis, and I also think that the side benefit is they could kind of X out Gonzaga a little bit, you know, send them a little further, either in Minneapolis or Memphis, so get them further away from their fan base.
I agree with that take. I guess I'm just being a little selfish here that I am less of a Denver cultural scene guy. I don't like hiking. I'm not going to smoke marijuana in Denver. So I'm just like, for me, Memphis is a much better city. You got barbecue. You got a lot more diversity. I'm from Kansas City. I like the Chiefs.
What if Dane Donja? Yeah. What if Tristan Clark doesn't pan out next year, and Dane Donja is the second coming of Caleb Swanigan? Do you choose Minneapolis for Dane's sake?
If that happens, not only do you choose Minneapolis, but if the NCAA ends up changing the name, image, and likeness rules, I will give Dane my government, you know, Andrew Yang stimulus check, whatever. I will sign the check over to him if that happens. Only if the name, image, likeness rules change. I don't want to be classified as a booster right now. Again, only if it changes. I'm not a booster. If the NCAA is listening to this call, which they hopefully aren't listening to our podcast, but if they are, again, I'm only saying that as a joke, folks.
Right.
But also reality.
Yeah, no, that kind of be tough. Minneapolis is probably a small percentage chance just because of some of the other good teams that might be in that cluster, you know, that would have a lot of fan base. So the Final Four is in Indianapolis next year. So it would be Denver, Memphis would be kind of your most probable picks, I would think. That's the closest to you in proximity. So if Baylor is 2018 Villanova and they dominate in the regular season and they have the option to choose their regional, I say that the path would be Dallas, Denver, and then Indianapolis. That I'll go on record saying that's probably the path that they would choose.
It's very reasonable, but I just really hope that they consider doing the right thing and letting us go to Memphis, because that's such a better city. Or even, like, Brooklyn is a much better place, too, than...
Yeah, Brooklyn's pretty cool, but that's pretty far away from your fan base.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculously far away. I guess the only thing you'd have for Brooklyn is if you get everybody to come back, you can say, we will let you play in the Barclays Center for the Elite Eight, but...
Right.
I'm obviously not rooting for Baylor to fall to being the fourth number one and having to go east, but I can just tell you, you have a heck of a lot more fun in Brooklyn, New York, than you have in Denver, Colorado. So if you do drugs, Denver would be more fun, but I want fun without drugs.
I can't
imagine how miserable.
You got some skiing out there. Probably you can do some skiing that time of year, just like you could in Salt Lake City.
Either.
Yeah, you're not a skier. Yeah,
the Minneapolis one would just be god awful too, because you know it's going to snow.
Yeah,
in that Minneapolis regional, so I can't imagine having to go through ice to deal with that. So do well.
I get
the players to think properly, unless I'll go to Memphis.
I had a financial client that was in. And I'll wrap it up after this comment, or let you do some closing comments. But I had a financial client that lived in Edina, and I went to see him in like June and July. I was like, man, Minneapolis is awesome. And then, you know, for some reason, I made the choice to go see him in January, and I walked off the, you know, the like getting from the plane, you know, to the airport, and I was like, ooh, it's cold. And then, you know, like I get outside, it's like 19 below with the wind chill. I'm like, what in the world am I doing? This is insane. And so like, that was like my last visit to Minneapolis in wintertime. I kind of vowed then, I was like, all right, there's no reason, no good reason for me to ever visit Minneapolis unless it's, you know, May through September.
No, absolutely.
Any closing comments, Kendall?
I think I've offered all my hot takes there. I guess I'll make the prediction now. If everybody comes back for Baylor, they are the national champions in 2021.
I like it. I agree. I mean, I to me, it's Villanova 2018 part two. If you got Jared Butler and Davion Mitchell and Macy Oteague, reminds me a lot of that Jalen Brunson and Mikal Bridges and, you know, Booth and DiVincenzo, you know, obviously Adam Flagler in the mix there. You know, reminds me of those four guards a lot. You know, Mark Vidal, you can't really make the comparison to Spellman and Pascal with Vidal and Tristan Clark and Matt Meyer. And even maybe a Dane Donja or JTT really contributing heavily. But you can say that, you know, this is a team where we have a defined style of play. We've got a lot of experience. These guys have been playing together in practice, and they're going to be very familiar with each other. And I think that they've got the attitude. They've got the work ethic. Defensively, we know they're going to be pretty good. The question is, can they really increase their offensive efficiency? And I think they can. And I think one of the best you know, barometers for increased offensive efficiency from year to year is getting your experienced guards to return. You know, everything just seems to be more in rhythm, you know, your ball movement, the Villanova, the Oklahoma, when Buddy Hield was a senior, you know, those are the teams that come to mind. You just have like a well-oiled machine offensively. And certainly that's what I would expect next year for Baylor. Because if you can't trust Scott Drew on offense, who can you trust? I mean, he's been in the top 25 of offensive efficiency more times than has not been the last 15 years.
Truly the Dr. Fauci of offensive minds.
All right, stay safe. Everybody get past this very tumultuous time in America. And let's look forward to some great basketball next year. And it was fun doing this podcast with you, Kendall. Sick 'em Bears.
Heck yeah. Thanks, Ashley.